26, 2002 show. Well, an unusual intro, perhaps. That's what comes of bringing the wrong tapes and CDs. But we are going to have a show nonetheless. We have 3.5 hours ahead of us. Some interesting guests are due, both in person and on the line. There may be some news from Camp Paradise, or shall I say, the kind of smaller Camp Paradise sequel that is living out there in Aptos at one of the churches on the property out there, and we've gotten some word of some changes going on internally in Camp Paradise. We may get a call from Dirt Clod or other activists out there, other survivors out there, as well as Chris Fredrickson, attorney for Camp Paradise, who's appealing the Camp Paradise 3 trial, should be showing up probably around 11:45. So that's going to be about an hour and a half. Until then, we're going to be regaling you with music, street interviews, and, of course, the usual scintillating commentary from your host. That's me. I'm Bathrop's PO, Robert Norse. On this show, we cover civil rights on the streets and all around the town, and we also rely on you to let us know what's going on. The phone number, in case you want to be a part of that process, is 427-3772, 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz. We always need to know what's cooking, and hope you can be a part of that whole thing. It really is the community that tells us what's going on, and I can only make kind of educated guesses. Sometimes I think I know what's happening, and then suddenly, bim-bam, don't know what's cooking, and find that I was, in fact, wrong about what I thought was cooking. You got to kind of draw from a number of sources to see what's happening. I picked up today's paper, and I haven't had a chance to look them over very carefully. The Chronicle has headlines about the protest, the Take the Bridge protest that happened yesterday. I wandered over to the nonviolence training that was happening on campus, 20 or 30 kids and young and older folks too, youth and elderly mingling together, trying to figure out what to do, what tactics to use to make the kind of fundamental changes that would establish, you know, a really nonviolent and fair society that was worthwhile, and that gets rid of some of the profound problems that we have now. The ones that I'm always harping on, of course, are the disparities in treatment for people who are poor and homeless, and that's my major grievance, my major gripe. How do you deal with it? What do you do with a nuclear machine? That was really kind of the kickoff point up there that the trainers were talking about and describing their own history of both protest and then legal support for those protests. Began with the strong anti-nuclear movement of the early 80s, and of course we still have got this same damn nukes hanging around, I guess somewhat reduced, but not significantly enough to give us any kind of peace or security. And we have these hoaxy deals between Bush and Putin that don't involve any real reductions, take some nuclear weapons offline, but don't involve any kind of destruction of nuclear weapons. It sounds like one of those backroom swaps that isn't going to stop the military machine one iota. Of course, I could be wrong on that, and I hope I am. And for me, the use of civil disobedience and civil resistance and other nonviolent direct action tactics is of particular interest locally, because while I'd love to see them used nationally, and they are used nationally and have been to some effect, the Seattle protests were wonderful, and the establishment is still reeling from that protest up there in 1999. But here in Santa Cruz, we have a whole set of anti-homeless laws downtown which criminalize people for sitting. And there's a whole new set of them apparently coming down the pike as well, being pushed by merchants and managers at Borders who are all over the front page of the Sentinel, or the Sentinel as it calls itself. Dan Whitebread, or Whiteout, what you will, is doing his usual job, I would imagine. I haven't read his stories closely, but or maybe the headlines just look nasty. And we're going to be talking about that later as soon as I've had a chance to take a peek at it. Maybe playing the interview today with Paul Wagner on the issue of mobile home rent control that has come up, and I've referred to that in past shows. The Santa Cruz City Council is considering, I would say, selling out. Paul Wagner would probably say making accommodations with and trying to come to an understanding with in order to deal with a serious budget crisis and the costs of fighting those powerful attorney-rich landlords that want to rip out and rip off the mobile home folks at De Anza and elsewhere here in Santa Cruz from the small protections they now have. I guess they actually have larger protections than most of us. Had a long interview with Paul, and I was hoping to play that today. I'm going to have to see if I have that tape with me, and if I don't, if I can secure it, maybe play it. Love to get a report on how things went yesterday at Take the Bridge, if anybody was there, or if anybody has even some reliable secondhand information. I'm hoping that we can get a report about the youth speakout that happened on Friday at Loudoun Nelson Center, whether this is one of those co-opted, controlled, adult-monitored events, or whether we're actually going to hear about some real youth issues in Santa Cruz. I see the second issue of The Alarm is out with an article by our own V-Man below the fold there about the protest at Vandenberg Air Force Base. Hats off to the V-Man for, you know, covering these things and, more important, being there to lend his support. I've been rather critical of The Alarm. I'm not going to stop being critical until they start doing the kind of criticism is necessary to make changes in this town. I don't think the schmoozing approach is going to work. It's been tried by scan lookalikes for years, and it just does not work, and I have no sympathy with it. So, again, I'm not in a position to give an intelligent point-by-point critique of the first two issues of The Alarm and what they mean, and I invite comments from others who want to talk about it, who may have read the issues more thoroughly than I. I just look for, frankly, hard-hitting attacks on repression and political corruption locally. And if I don't find them, since I know these things exist, I hold my nose and turn to another paper, really, particularly with papers that are put together supposedly to deal with that kind of issue. So, you know, I'm going to keep hoping I'm going to see that in The Alarm. If you don't like a newspaper, go out and buy one. Start your own, I guess, or start talking on the radio like some of us do, and that's what I do. Again, you're tuned to Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, and we have this phone line, which I think is operational. And I'll just pick it up. Yeah, I hear a dial tone. 427-3772, in case anyone wants to call in. We have a city council meeting coming up Tuesday, as happens every second and fourth Tuesdays, and so we're going to be looking into that one. Dirt Clod, from one of the co-founders of Camp Paradise, was going to be here for the first hour, but he had an important meeting he had to go to that came up at the church where his camp is camped, and that's going to delay him, so that he is instead going to call in and give us kind of an update and then come in more for a longer show, I should say for a shorter show, but for a longer period of time when he'll be on the air between 6 and 8 on Thursday, which will be coming down the pike in 4 days, as you know. So I apologize if folks got some misimpression from a prior press release, which I don't think actually specified the time. The one I read, I've been rushing, so I haven't been able to catch all the press releases that have gone out on this. And I want to thank Becky Johnson for doing the footwork on that stuff, or the finger work on the computer. It's good to know what's coming on the air before it comes on, particularly on a long show like this, so you can actually kind of stay tuned at the right time and know what's cooking. Let's catch a little, catch a note or two, and then proceed with Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. Thank you.
I'm trying to make a living, trying to make ends meet. But every day I get a little closer to the street, I'm getting squeezed. I had a little trouble and my money got spent. And when it's coming on, I'm raising the rent. I'm getting squeezed. Yeah, I'm getting squeezed. I've been to college, even got a degree. Fat lot of good it did me. I'm getting squeezed. Well, I used to believe in this American dream. Some people said I was a fool. Now I see what they mean. I'm getting squeezed. Yeah, I'm getting squeezed. I never thought I'd live to see times like these. I'm getting squeezed. I see the news, people beautiful, they do it in style. They talk about disaster with a smile. They're getting paid big money just to spend it around. But they better not come down in my part of town. I'm getting squeezed. Big money's booming, but ain't no doubt. We're in the way, so they're moving us out. We're getting squeezed. Anything they don't like, they're just tearing it down. They want a sanitary city, they ain't fooling around. We're getting squeezed. Yeah, we're getting squeezed. Well, the mayor came by, he had somebody in a tux. They were talking business, pointing at us. We're getting squeezed. And then the company came, you know, when things got a real, all that heavy equipment, it must be a big deal. We're getting squeezed. Yeah, we're getting squeezed. I never thought I'd live to see times like these. I'm getting squeezed. Well, you can talk about your progress, don't make me laugh. Everybody I know is just taking a bath. You know, there's only so much that people can take. Sooner or later, something's bound to break. We're getting squeezed. Well, I did a little talking with a buddy of mine. Something's gotta happen, maybe now is the time. We're getting squeezed. So I got me a kryptonite bicycle lock, a bandana and a monkey wrench. I went for a walk, I'm getting squeezed. Yeah, I can't be specific, but I'll give you the facts. If they bother me some, I'm gonna bother them back. We're getting squeezed. Yeah, we're getting squeezed. Never thought I'd live to see times like these. I'm getting squeezed. Well, I may be going down, but I won't be on my knees. I'm getting squeezed.
We're in front of Borders, right near Hippie Bench, talking with
Ashley
from
Kansas.
And are you, I mean, I know I've talked to a woman from Nebraska across the street. Is that your friend?
No.
I mean, Kansas and Nebraska are neighboring states.
Yeah.
So, you're from Kansas. Why did you come out here? Because of the wonderful reputation of Santa Cruz?
No, I was hitchhiking around since I was about 13, and I got pregnant, and that's where I was when I was 9 months pregnant. I was going to stop, and it was in Kansas, and I got stuck there for 9 months.
And how old are you now?
17.
And how old is your baby?
7 months old.
Where is that baby?
He is with my friend Brent and my friend Christian right now. He took him so I could go out.
I see. So, but the baby is not too far away.
No, he's safe. He went down to River Street and back.
So, you are a woman who has been on the streets for a while.
Yeah.
And was this because of an adventurous spirit, a bad home scene, a passion for religion? What drove you out?
Actually, my mother is married to a police officer. My parents got divorced, and my stepdad's a cop, and he kicked me out of their house. I was living with my dad, and he went to jail.
Heroin you were shooting up?
No. but my dad was living with him. Then he went to jail, and I just didn't have anywhere to live, so I ended up on the streets. And he just now got out. So.
Now, you're a short, attractive woman. You're young. How do you fare on the streets? How do you defend yourself? Are you? I mean, the question that I've been asked to ask women is, for example, have you been assaulted or raped recently?
No, I got picked up by the Green River Killer when I was hitchhiking through Sacramento. My first time I left home, I was by myself. But since then, most of the people on the streets take care of me.
Are you still alive, or am I having a fantasy?
No, I'm still alive. He let me go.
And how do you know he was the... Who, what is this? He announced to you, I am in fact the Green River Killer. Hi there.
No, he just told me about people he'd killed, and a couple months later I saw his picture in the paper, and it said that's who he was.
Did he tell you this to terrify you, to edify you, or to...
To terrify me.
Were you terrified?
Yeah.
And how did you get away from the Green River Killer?
He just dropped me off. I begged him, and I told him I was pregnant, so he just let me go.
So you think that... Were you pregnant at the time?
Yeah.
Wow. And so, but you haven't otherwise been assaulted?
Nope. Everybody takes care of me. Make sure I'm okay.
You do look, you know, quite lovable, but we won't get into that at this time.
Okay.
Anything you want to say for free radio?
Give people on the streets a chance. They're not all that bad. We're real people, too. We reproduce.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I just parked over there by the Metro Center.
We're talking with...
I just parked him by the Metro Center.
Looks like Arnaldo Dominguez.
Yeah.
And you have gotten... You handed me two pieces of paper, two tickets.
Yeah. One ticket for missing... I missed the court.
One ticket for missing a judge... referee Mulligan's court. And the other ticket is
for bicycle
on the sidewalk. On Pacific Avenue, no less. This is by badge 185. Now, you got this ticket on today, right?
Yeah, today.
How long ago?
About 1 hour.
And what happened? Who was the cop involved? Do you know his name?
The name is there. I don't know the name.
It says B something. I don't know.
Another ticket here by the Metro Center. I don't drive the bike in one way. The guy stopped me. Why give me a ticket? I give a ticket.
He stopped you at the Metro Center for being on the sidewalk or
not? On the sidewalk. Yes. Where you want? I go over there. Okay, over there is one way. But I don't go there. I go through the...
You're going the wrong way on a one-way street?
Yeah.
And it looks like he didn't give you a ticket. It looks like he just gave you a warning.
Yeah, but I told the guy, I have a warrant. Why you take me to jail? You know, why you give me another ticket?
What are you doing?
So you invited him to take you to jail?
Yeah, but I said, the guy said you got a warrant. Okay.
There's been a lot of hassling of people on bikes recently downtown, I've noticed. You drive the wrong way on the street, you get a ticket. If you're on the sidewalk, you get a ticket. It looks like a real racket.
Yeah.
My advice is to, I always advise is, if you depends whether you have the time, go to the law library and look up the code sections. I mean, I don't know, how's your command of English? Can you read English pretty well?
Not very well.
Not so well.
But you know, I'm sick for many years, you know, I can't work, you know, they just got my report, my problem in my stomach, you know, I have problem here and I have problem in my liver.
Right.
Yeah, I go to the Dominican, but
how long have you lived in Santa Cruz?
3 years.
And how's the rent treating you?
The rent is too much money, man. I'm staying in a shelter, man.
And what kind of work do you do?
I work sometimes for different people, construction, gardens.
I remember talking to you before.
Yeah, remember the guy take my bike? He said, I give a ticket, I take you back when you pay the ticket. Remember when you talked to the
doctor? A couple years ago.
Yeah, no, about 3 years maybe.
And what happened with that kid?
That case is no.
Get your bike back?
Yeah, give me the bike back.
We had to kick a little ass to do that.
Yeah.
Remember that. The only thing I can say is go to court, plead not guilty, and disqualify Mulligan. That's my advice. So actually what you're saying, again your name is?
Arnulfo Martinez.
So, Arnulfo, you would prefer to actually go to jail under these tickets, right?
Yeah.
Because you're ill and you don't have the money to pay for it.
I don't have, because I'm work a couple days, one day yeah, one day no, you know. Maybe I got an appointment where I go see my doctor to see what happened with my liver, because I had another problem here. This problem, goes to my liver.
Right. We have Dave the Blade here.
What kind of accusation is that?
It has to do with the trailer and the problems you had with her way back.
And we have a little dispute there on the street with Dave the Blade, and I don't want to get into that at this time. It was one occasionally runs into folks that one has differences of opinion with, and it's important to kind of move beyond those in the interests of the broader situation. So be moving forward past that particular bit of street dialogue into some more, I think, of general interest. And let's see if we can get back onto that. While we're preparing that, here's another brief moment of music.
And that was a song about, you know, living in like a low-income apartment building or something and having you know, our developer mayor or somebody decide they're going to tear it down to make way for a Nike town or Planet Hollywood or something like that. And this is a song about one of the people that live in those low-income apartment buildings. Man, I met a long time ago by the name of Mr. Ondo. One afternoon as I came home to the building where I lived alone, I met an old man on the stairs as he paused to catch his breath there. His face was drawn and pale, his hand was clenched to grip the rail. He had a long way to go, and his name was Mr. Ondo. Well, I offered him my helping hand, my steady legs to help him stand. My room's upstairs and straight ahead. I'm not feeling very well, he said. We reached the door, he turned the key. He turned around to look at me, and I saw myself in years to come. Thank you, he said. I said, you're welcome. And we all have so far to go, don't we, Mr. Ondo? Passed by it all too soon. There came another afternoon when I was home alone once more with someone rapping at my door. It was Mr. Ondo, looking well, holding out a dollar bill. As so eagerly he bowed his head, this is for your help, he said. Well, I refused, but he would not relent. And then I saw how much it meant. A dollar for the man inside, for that was how he wore his pride. And pride is all that you've got left when they've all gone and you've been left at home alone in the winter's chill. So I took his dollar bill. And we all have so far to go, don't we, Mr. Ondo? Thank you.
stage, doing a bit of Sunday morning stuff. On the line with us, however, is another Sunday morning man, Wiley Drake, pastor of Buena Park's, tell me the name of your church again.
First Southern Baptist Church.
Thank you.
Buena Park.
For us atheists, it's hard to remember the names of churches. You probably have trouble remembering the German philosophers. I have trouble with the churches.
Yeah.
Well, Wiley, you're a man, of course, who's been to jail for putting people up in your church. You're on the radio yourself as a broadcaster trying to secure justice for homeless people in the courts in Buena Park, which, of course, sounds like rolling that huge rock uphill every Sunday and watching it roll down on top of you every Monday.
Yeah.
And I know that you've been waiting. You called me this morning because you were wondering what happened to the right to sleep, I should say the sleepwalkers, heading for Sacramento, who want to end the sleeping ban statewide, and we're trying to hook you up with them.
Well, we were sort of hoping that they would be able to stop here in Buena Park and get a little rest and let us water them up and feed them up and then also go over and walk by the City Hall and let City Hall know that we've got some folks walking through town that are in opposition to people that don't like for people to sleep. And so we thought we might sort of do two things, you know, just sort of get the city's attention again. They've begun to chip away back. What they do here is that they come out gung-ho and then they shoot themselves in the foot because the media and the public outcry gets up and says, why don't you leave that poor guy alone? He's trying to help those people. And the city gets mad because they get bad PR. And then a local Orange Coast magazine did a beautiful, beautiful article on us, and then in response to that article, in the newspaper, Gary Hicken, we've dubbed him now Barney Fife. He even looks a little bit like Barney Fife.
Now, who is Barney Fife for us people who are culturally illiterate here?
Barney Fife was on the Andy Griffith Show. You know, he was the local. Andy Griffith was the local sheriff of Mayberry, and Barney Fife was the his deputy, and he was the guy who always wore his uniform. Andy Griffin was the local sheriff and a good guy and just wore civilian clothes, but he had a deputy, Barney Fife, a little squealy Don Knott character, and he would let him wear a gun and a belt and the uniform, but he only gave him one bullet and he couldn't have it in the gun. He always had to have the bullet in his pocket. And so Barney Fife, a lot of episodes about him wanting to be gung-ho policeman. And
that sounds like a good approach for the LAPD, I don't know.
Yeah, right. And then after many, many episodes, they finally did let him he said, okay, you've been a good guy. We're going to let you put the bullet in the gun. And he put the bullet in the gun, and then he shot himself in the foot.
Dig it.
So Buena Park keeps doing that. Just to give you an example of what they've done recently, they had sort of left us alone for a while and weren't giving out too many jaywalking tickets and weren't leaning on the homeless. And all of a sudden, we have a pickup truck that goes out and picks up supplies and food and things from the people that donated. If they can't get it here, we'll go pick it up. And we have a trailer hitch on that truck because it's a truck that we use a trailer with sometimes. Well, the police pulled the truck over, and their probable cause was the trailer hitch ball was blocking the license plate number. And they searched the truck, stem to stern, under the hood, behind the gas cap, underneath, under the truck. They even used mirrors to look under the truck. They couldn't find anything, and so they didn't write a citation at the time. They told the man that was driving, you can go back to the church now, but we'll be sending you a ticket in the mail. Well, then Barney Fife, a.k.a. Gary Hicken, sent me a letter saying, since your truck was in violation of the penal code, or the vehicle code, rather, obstruction of license, rear license plate, we sent it on to the district attorney's office, and they're going to be filing charges.
Well, maybe they should call in the feds.
Well, I think they should. You know, I mean, after all, you know, they're blocking the blocking the license plate number with a trailer ball is, and so we started referring to this as a great trailer ball, caper down here in Buena Park. And we went out to the friend of mine and I, a friend that works here with me, Alan Smullen, and I went out to the city yard and we photographed one of their trucks. And they had a trailer ball obstructing the license plate on the city truck, but also had a huge bracket. and you could not read the license number at all. With ours, you could read the license. You had to sort of look around the ball, but you could read it. But on the city's, you could not determine what the license number was on the truck.
Well, this sounds like a perfect case for a citizen's arrest.
Well, I took a picture of that truck's license and took a picture of our license. We did go to the city hall. We went down and we went through the normal procedure rather than fight it, because you can't get a jury trial with a traffic ticket. We went ahead and went to the city hall. We basically unscrewed the trailer ball hitch on our truck, turned it upside down, and then we took it to the police station, and an officer came out to sign it off that we had fixed it. And she looked at it and said, "What did they give you a ticket for?" And we said, "Obstructing the license plate." She said, "You got to be kidding. That's the silliest thing I've ever heard of." And so she said, "They must have been bored.
I think they were trying to cut off your balls."
Well, interestingly enough, someone sent a letter to Police Chief Gary Hicken, or an email to Gary Hicken, and sent me a copy of it. And they said that it was a terrible thing that they were doing to us. And the way he closed out his email, he said, "Well, interestingly enough," he said, I think the city of Buena Park has a great interest in balls. Maybe Gary Hicken ought to apply for North Hollywood police chief or something."
Well, it could be envy. He envies your trailer ball.
Evidently.
Yeah, we've heard of penis envy, but trailer ball envy, that's a little something new, I guess.
Yeah, so anyway, I sent a picture of the license plate of our truck and the license plate of the city truck. I sent that by email to our local mayor, and Patsy Marshall, and I got an email yesterday from her saying, "Thank you for pointing out the discrepancy with our trailer ball hitches. If we're not towing anything, we will make sure they're all removed when our trucks are on the street."
Well, I'm glad that the law is alive and well in Buena Park. Buena Park, for those who don't know, is how do we call it, a suburb of Los Angeles, or one of the many little towns that make up Los Angeles? You're in Orange County.
We're in Orange County. Basically, yeah. Buena Park was a little tiny town out here, many miles, 25 miles from downtown Los Angeles. Now we are part of Los Angeles, you know, all that's grown up in between it. But Walter Knott started a little berry farm out here many, many years ago, back during the Depression. And he had an interest in gold rush towns and ghost towns, and collected a lot of junk and started a little junk display with a roadside stand. And now it has turned into, of course, to a great amusement park. Been here for many, many years.
Knott's Berry Farm.
Yeah, Knott's Berry Farm. Uh-huh. And that is sort of the flagship. Buena Park is about 75,000 people, and their claim to fame, of course, is Knott's Berry Farm. And then they have Ripley's, Believe It or Not, and Wild Bill's Wild West Show, and we also have a...
Wiley Drake's Church, let's not forget
Wiley
that.
Wiley Drake's Church is on the tourist...
So side. Civil rights activists all have to visit Wiley Drake's Church if they want to, you know, the real tour of the L.A. area, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We'd love to have anyone come and visit with us and see what we do. We have about 250 homeless people here overnight.
250? Wait a minute, that's 200 more than the court is supposed to allow you to have.
Well, yeah, it's actually a little over 200. I think we're legally allowed 52, I guess it is, so we're only about 200.
But they have not attempted to enforce that order, right?
So far, in fact, they not only have not attempted to enforce it, but the Sheriff's Department of Orange County brings us people, you know, almost every week.
Oh, they're trying to use you as a non-paid homeless service center.
Absolutely, right. As well as the Buena Park Police Department.
That's cheesy, man.
Most of the cops, and I know this, you know, a lot of people are going to think I've really bought into something, but most of the cops in this town are good cops. Most of the cops here feel sorry for the homeless people, and if they find them in a park or find them down under a underpass, they do their job and say, "Hey, you can't sleep here, you can't stay here." And some of the homeless people say, "Well, where do I go?" And they say, "Well, get in a car, we'll give you a ride up to Wiley's Church." And so the Buena Park Police Department, most of them do cooperate and do cut us a lot of slack. But it's the chief, the former chief, was Herr Richard T. Fink, and then he retired and left town, and turned it over to Barney Fife, a.k.a. Gary Gestapo Hicken.
Have you tried any kind of lawsuits against him? I know that you had a... you had a contretemps at the courthouse where you tried to you were defending. Well, there were two cases of elderly women who were harassed for camping by the DA's office. That your publicity and your defense and their willingness to stand up for themselves resulted in the cases being dropped.
Well, the cases were dropped in those situations, and over the last couple of years, we've won. They didn't get dropped. We've actually won in court about 15 different times. Because typically the way these things go is they go in there with a shopping cart ticket, or they go in there with a jaywalking ticket, or they go in there with a sleeping ticket, and the judge says, how do you plead? And the DA has already said, look, if you'll just plead guilty, we'll get you out of here today. You'll be gone. Just plead guilty. The judge will give you a little fine. If you were in jail, they'll consider it jail. We'll ask him for, you know, time served, and you'll be out of here. You'll get 3 years probation, but who cares? And you'll be out of here today if you'll just plead guilty. But if they don't plead guilty, then they say, well, you know, you could go to jail for up to a year and get $6,000 fine and all this.
For an illegal shopping cart or jaywalking?
Yeah.
Jaywalking is a misdemeanor in Buena Park?
Yeah.
Wow.
And so they out of fear, make these people think, well, hey, if I could get out of here today, I'm gone. So, yeah, I'll say whatever you want me to say. Well, we encourage the people only to plead guilty if they feel like they're guilty, not only of breaking the law, but if the law is a bad law. In other words, we believe that if it's, for example, there's a law in Buena Park that says you can't sleep more than 2 hours in your vehicle. Well, if someone is in their vehicle, I don't know how they determine whether they slept for a solid 2 hours, or maybe we're just laying in there for 6 hours and only slept an hour and a half.
Well, I understand they have a new device, kind of a parking meter that you put on your eyelid, you see. And it registers when the 2 hours is up.
Oh, I see. Okay. But anyway, we encourage the people to plead not guilty and fight it. And we have several fellows in the public defender's office that, in fact, one of the sort of leaders in the public defender's office says we love to get Buena Park cases because we know that the First Southern Baptist Church is going to give it some publicity, and we know that when we do get to court, if it ever goes to court, it's a slam dunk because they don't put their cases together very well. And so over the last couple of years, we've won probably 15, 16 different cases, everything from trespassing on the railroad track to jaywalking and possession of stolen property, i.e. a shopping cart, and drunk in public and so on and so forth. And we've won a bunch of those.
Now, has your relations with the public defender's office improved in the last couple of years?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They love to see us. Now, there's one or two of them that, you know, are toe the party line and think I'm a terrible guy because I'm just trying to help these terrible criminals get off, you know.
Is there a problem that develops because of the fact that you're also very conservative in terms of your political views, with, you know, being a Republican Party stalwart on the right wing of the Republican Party, and, you know, the controversies around your opposing gay partner stipends at Disneyland?
It does, Robert, raise a few problems once in a while. We had a gentleman here recently, for example, that was very obviously outwardly, by anybody's guess or imagination, he's very obviously a homosexual. And we let him stay here, and I told him, look, I'm going to tell you the same thing I tell every heterosexual. This is a church, your dress code, your language code, and this is not a love-in feast. You know, you're not here to make friends and influence, but you're not here to make love. You're here to eat, sleep, and be indoctrinated by us, if you can put up with it. If not, you can leave. And then
appreciate your candor, Wiley.
Well, you know, the bottom line is simply this. We make no apologies for being, you know, Christian by nature, Judeo-Christian principles and so forth. And we simply, you know, and this young man stayed here with us quite a while. And he admitted that when he first came, it was sort of an experiment for him. He said, I knew I'd go up there and that homophobic Wiley would throw me out in a heartbeat, because he is, you know, he's one of the guys I call light in the loafers, you know, whispery voice and all the stereotypical, you know, homosexual attributes. And you know, we didn't kick him out. He stayed here for a long time. I said, just like I say to heterosexual, I catch you hitting on people. I don't care if they're boys or girls. I catch you hitting on people. That's not appropriate here. Go somewhere else and do it. Don't do it here. I'm going to kick you out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And, I kicked a man and his wife. They've been married 14 years. I kicked them out a couple of weeks ago because they couldn't keep their hands off each other. And they're married, legally married, et cetera, et cetera. But it's just not appropriate here at church. And so so it raises, sometimes, you know, people, you know, sort of think, well, golly, how could he be wanting to help people because he's such a homophobe and such a terrible person? And on the other hand, you know, the people, quote, on my side that are, you know, would be in the same category, you know, put in the same category as conservative, homophobic, et cetera, wonder, well, why in the world would you fool with those liberals, you know, and why do you, you know, we walk hand in hand down here with the ACLU and some other things and some particular things. So, you know, I get...
Sounds like you're kind of independent in your perspective. Right?
Yeah, sort of. I try to just look at every case individually and try to do the best we can to help people. That's our goal.
Up in Santa Barbara, attorney Glenn Maurer has been successfully using the necessity defense to get folks who are sleeping in their vehicles essentially off, and has actually persuaded the, well, by winning all the cases, the way apparently you say that you're winning many of your cases, the police department no longer goes after people in vehicles. In fact, they've tried to do other things like make it a criminal parking offense, so they don't have to give people, it's not a jury trial offense in Santa Barbara, I don't think, but it still requires an appearance before a judge. If it's simply a parking ticket, it's an administrative process much harder for homeless people to contest,
right?
As you know. So I'm just wondering if you've tried using the necessity defense in any of your cases.
Well, we have. In fact, the matter is, my attorney tried to use the necessity defense for me because when they charged me with 11 criminal misdemeanors because I had all these homeless people in the church, but the judge and most of the judges down here will not allow the necessity defense. Now, they say, obviously, that they do, but as you know, there's like a 3 or 4 prong.
Six.
Is there six?
Yeah.
Okay.
Six prongs.
You know, there's 6 prongs then of the necessity defense.
Right, you have to prove, it's an affirmative defense, you have to prove all 6 of them, that it was a greater evil you're averting than the one that the law you're breaking, that you didn't contribute to the evil, that it was you had a reasonable good faith belief. There's a whole series of them. But the significance is, as far as I can see, in camping cases, and you may not actually use it in camping cases, because in a church it's a little different. I mean,
yeah.
And also, if the charge is against you and not against the homeless people, the homeless person can say, I had a necessity to sleep.
Yeah.
I had a necessity. But for them to say, for you to say, well, I had a necessity to help that person sleep.
Yeah.
No, you could have gone home and watched television. No,
yeah.
You could have gone and done your church service and said, you know, go to the next jurisdiction and deal with it. You could have essentially denied your conscience on this matter and done something else. So, but there is, in fact, a decision statewide called the ICORN case, which
yeah,
you may have heard about.
Yeah, we're familiar with that one. We brought that one up several times. That was here in Santa Ana.
That requires judges to allow at least the presentation of the necessity defense in every single camping case that comes up.
Yeah.
So have you actually, has it been used in camping cases at all in the Gwinnett
Well,
Park?
Again, yeah, it has been used and has been used successfully in the outright pure camping cases. In the other cases, it has not. But even in the camping cases, what the judges typically do, they found a way around it. They will, quote, allow the necessity defense, but then they will then instruct the jury that, you know, hey, we've been over backwards to help these people, and we want to help these people, and we're not anti-homeless, we're not anti-people, but we're the law, we're legal, and I'm instructing you that they had to meet these 6 prongs, and they only met 5 of them, so therefore, with 1 prong missing, I'm instructing you as a jury, you have to...
No, wait, this is the judge or the DA that does this?
This is the judge.
Oh, that's illegitimate behavior by a judge. It's up to the jury to make those decisions.
Well, but
the
judges give necessity, they give instructions all the time.
You have to give those judges a paddling, I think.
Well, that's exactly what
corporal punishment
I got kicked out of the courthouse down here. North Court Justice Center, I'm not allowed even to go in the courthouse.
Well, no, you were caught with a criminal weapon, to wit, a cell phone.
Yeah, and I violate it all the time. I go in there all the time.
Oh my!
And you know, but you know, and I'm sort of hoping one day they'll arrest me because I need the rest, and I want to start a jail ministry.
There you go.
But at any rate, I want to push the issue. This judge issued a court order that said I can't come into the courthouse with a cell phone, and while I'm there, I'm not even allowed to use the payphone or the public phone. And I'm not allowed to come in the courthouse unless I'm there under subpoena. And I go back all the time because we encourage people and we tell people, when you go before the judge, encourage the judge, ask the judge to give you community service. And see, they don't like me because There are some judges. We do have a few judges in Orange County that are good judges. And typically what would happen, for example, if a person received a guilty, they pled guilty or whatever, and the judge says, okay, I'm going to give you so many days in jail, get counted as time served, and I'm going to fine you $100. And that's sort of a typical thing in court.
Mm-hmm.
Time served, 3 years probation, $100 fine. And then if the person will ask the judge, Your Honor, I'm homeless, that's what got me in trouble, I don't have $100, could you convert that $100 into community service? And most judges, if they think they're not being flim-flam, will say, yeah, okay, I'll tell you what I'll do. Rather than a $100 fine, I'll give you 20 hours of community service.
Well, it's also, you know, cost-effective because the processing costs of people, you know, if you're going to arrest them again for not paying the fine, it's going to cost the state much more than $100 anyway.
Well, but the other thing that happens is that typically, though, when that happens, the judge says, okay, I'm going to give you 20 hours of community service, and he stamps it with the court stamp. But then they've got to go to the Volunteer Service Center, which is also run by the court. And the Volunteer Service Center then says, okay, you got to pay $70,
right,
and
yep,
we'll send you out to various areas to work off your community service.
We have a similar kind of racket going here.
So they all, in essence, only save about $30. Well, what I found out was there are several judges in Orange County that have a great deal of respect for me and for what we do. And so I've told the people, when you go before the judge, encourage him to give you community service. But ask him, ask the judge, Judge, would you assign that community service not to the Volunteer Center, but directly to First Southern Baptist Church? Put that in the court order that you've got to work 20 hours of community service at First Southern Baptist Church. We don't charge anything for it, and therefore they literally get away without paying $100. They only have to do the 20 hours work.
Well, I will suggest that to our local homeless services center, which does some of the community service. I think there's also some other nonprofit groups that could do that. If they don't go through this, you know, I think it's somewhat less here than the $70. I think it's 50 or 25, but it's still onerous for people who don't have any money.
Right.
And they have to be, you know, instead of spending their time looking for real work, they have to engage in this so-called community service, when in fact they're usually there for something like